Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 11th of August, Tuesday class, the year 2020. We will be continuing with our Heart Sutta, second edition book. We are at page 176, lesson 35 and 36. Today's topic is also very interesting and very nice. It's centered on meditation, how to develop the heedfulness needed to cultivate the meditation. Later, as we go through, you will develop the clear understanding. So the instruction is the same. Just relax body and mind and maintain awareness. Then silence your mind completely. Through that silence, the awareness will be able to be aware of your true mind. Your true mind is the meditative mind, the silent mind, the awareness within. So just realize that. Then you can meditate. Then you can understand many things. Without realizing that true mind, you cannot meditate. So I will set the alarm now, half an hour. You are off the light, then you can have your meditation. Okay. Okay. You all can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Always remember, try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed. Stabilize it. Then use all these mind states that you have trained to live life, to develop the daily mindfulness. Then your cultivation will take off. You need to combine the formal meditation with your daily religious routine. So when your daily meditative state strengthens or stabilizes until your mind has the ability to enter sati, and when you come out of it, you are most of the time in sati, and daily mindfulness become very easy. When you are able to do that, means you have stabilized your daily mindfulness, then your meditation will progress very fast, because daily mindfulness is heedfulness. Without daily mindfulness, you cannot become heedful. So the continuity of mindfulness throughout the day, ever mindful, constantly meditative, that is heedfulness. Use that mind state to develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path. So when you do the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path, you will develop great wisdom, great understanding. The whole of the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path will lead to the three turning of the Four Noble Truth cultivation. And Noble Eightfold Path is a complete cultivation, starting with right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the four appropriate right effort to purify, to transform your thought process. Then because of your daily mindfulness, you are sensitive. You can see your mental intention. You can see how you act, how you speak, and how you arise your thought process. All this follow your views. So if your views are wrong, the whole Noble Eightfold Path fall apart. Wrong thought will condition, wrong view will condition wrong thought. And wrong thought will condition wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood. And everything will fall apart. But when you have right view, right understanding, and you understand truth, the three important right view with regards to law of karma, the spiritual law, law of mind, law of Dhamma or truth. When you have these three, You become beautiful. From there, you will have the Dhamma. You will know how to act. You will know how to arise your appropriate speech and thought process to live life, to communicate with people, to be a blessing to all. So all this, they are related. So Noble Eightfold Path is very important. After the four right effort is the right mindfulness with samasati. When your sati stabilizes, it becomes samasamadhi. So Noble Eightfold Path, when it fall into place, they become one cultivation. It's like I used to share in the early days. Those who know how to play the Chinese mahjong, they will know. There is a game, when you game, they call it Jiu Zi Lian Huan. Means it's either all Man Ji or Sok Ji or Tong Ji. Where you have three cards of number one, three cards of number nine, then in between 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So total is 13 cards. Do you know what you call? You call all the nine cards, 1 to 9. Whichever card come out, you can gain. So that is called Jiu Zi Lian Huan. So in a similar way, Noble Eightfold Path, when you cultivated it, you have cultivated it, that wisdom, that understanding will allow you to solve all problems. Like any card you can game, any problem, any issue, you can resolve it. You can develop the understanding and the wisdom, and you know what to do. You will know how to attend to life, everything. That's why it's amazing, it's very beautiful. Page 176, Art Sutta, 2nd edition, Lesson 35 and 36. Like I said earlier on, today's topic is very beautiful, as usual. Its title is very appropriate. How to develop the heedfulness needed to cultivate the meditation. So this part is very important. If you understand this, you will know how to develop the meditation accordingly. To develop the heedfulness needed to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, one must at least understand what is heedfulness. So this is obvious, isn't it? Then the second thing you have to understand is what is meditation. Otherwise, you cannot start. These two, very important. So what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha in order to start? It is just like you have a problem and you come to a meditation teacher. And he said to you, just meditate and your problem will be resolved. Is this going to be useful? If you do not even want to find out what is your problem, how can you start solving your problem when you do not even know what your problem is? Similarly with meditation, if you do not understand what meditation is, then how can you start developing it? Meditation and cultivation must be done with understanding. The key word is understanding, so that one is not gullible. So the reason why a lot of people end up doing thought-based meditation is because they don't understand what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And they don't understand what heedfulness is. Even sati, they don't really know what sati is. That's the reason why all the so-called Buddhist meditation become like very muddled up and gullible. People think they are meditating when they follow certain instruction to meditate, when they follow certain method, techniques, and ways of meditation to meditate. But the instrument they use is thought. So when you use thought, how can your mind be quiet? peaceful away within. How can you be in? You'll be in the meditative state. And how can there be sati when your thought is active? So this understanding is very important. For sati is mindfulness. And what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is just an awareness before the knowing. It's just the mind away. That's it. Finish. The moment you start to perceive or think the aggregate of mind arise, you are no longer aware. You are already creating thought process, thinking. So awareness and thought are different. When you are aware, there is no thought. So awareness is not consciousness yet. It's just aware, that nature aware, finish. When you become conscious, then that mind, mundane mind, has arisen. So the consciousness has arisen. Then after that, when you input your content of consciousness, it becomes a thought process. That's how thought arises. That's how you create thought. So this understanding is very important. Then what is meditation? That one is also very important. So we will go through it. I will read on, then you will develop the understanding. Dhammapada verses 21, 22, and 23 already stress the importance of heedfulness. So heedfulness must be a part of you in order for you to realize the enlightenment. Continuous heedfulness is the key to the noble life. If you are only heedful at times and heedless most of the time, then the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead. Means spiritually you don't stand a chance. Even though you may be alive, conscious of life, but spiritually you are like dead. That's why the heedless are as if dead. Means you don't stand a chance as far as spiritual awakening is concerned. So continuous heedfulness is key to the noble life. Those without heedfulness cannot become enlightened. Please refer to the earlier 34 Heart Sutta notes for the detailed explanation of what heedfulness is. So I will just, for the sake of some who may not recall or remember, explain what heedfulness is. So heedfulness is actually based on Dhammapada verse 23. Dhammapada verse 23, the Buddha explained, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana. So this confirms what heedfulness is, because when you are able to be ever mindful, constantly meditative, and you hold on to these two cultivational practices, then you will realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana, the unconditioned, the awakening, the enlightenment. So which means heedfulness is constantly meditative, ever mindful. So there are two parts to heedfulness. First is you must be ever mindful, then use it to meditate constantly, constantly meditative, ever mindful. To be ever mindful, what must you do? You have to train your mind to be mindful first, aware. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. That's the reason why normal people who don't understand the Dhamma, they don't know how to start the cultivation. They straight away go into meditation, thinking that by doing meditation, they can control their mind. They can make their mind peaceful, calm. And they believe whatever method, technique, or teaching that can bring about this result, they are willing to give it a try. And they think that is meditation. But no, meditation is not about training the mind to be peaceful and calm. That is just a byproduct of meditation if you do it correctly. But the meditation as taught by the Buddha is very specific. It is about mindfulness, awareness, leading to the silent mind, the meditative state, the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind. So to be aware is just a relaxed mind state of awareness before the thinking, before the arising of thought, before the stirring of mind. So the Buddha began his teaching by telling the monks, our mind has this ability to develop the five spiritual faculties. He called it spiritual faculties because these are faculties that can enable you to understand spiritual teachings. He said they are Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. In English, is Saddha is faith. Faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then Virya is the spiritual zeal, Z-E-A-L, or tenacity to go this way after understanding how important this meditation is, how important the Buddha Dhamma is. So when you see the importance of this teaching, you commit yourself to diligently cultivate. So spiritual zeal or tenacity to go this way, to train your mind, to develop the meditation, to awaken, is the second spiritual faculties. Then the third one is to develop sati, which is mindfulness, to be aware. Then stabilize it, to be ever mindful. Then when this mindfulness stabilizes until it is unwavering and collected, it becomes samadhi. And when there is sati and samadhi, there is your true mind. There is no thought. When you are in sati and samadhi, there is no thought. Just like the free mind in its natural state, without thought, is your true mind. Before your mind stir, react, and create thinking or thought process and become emotional, it was the beautiful silent mind within, the true mind. But the moment through delusion and ignorance, you react to sense experience, you stir your mind and make yourself entangled and emotional through wrong view and wrong thought, when you input the wrong content of consciousness inside, then that mundane mind arise and create delusion. That's how suffering comes to be. That's how living beings become heedless. So according to the Buddha, when you lack the spiritual faculty, you become heedless. Then the opposite five, he called it a mental hindrance, which are mind states that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. They are called the pancha nivaranas, the five mental hindrance, or what we call in Pali, pancha nivaranas, not nirvana, nivaranas. They are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and doubt. So these five mind states, when they arise because you lack the spiritual faculty, will make you heedless, especially sensual desire and ill will. When you crave after sensual pleasure, when you push away sense experience that you don't like, that's why your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, are your reaction to mind. They call mind consciousness. At the moment of consciousness, whether seeing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, the sixth sense. If you do not have wisdom, understanding, and equanimity, it will stir, your mind will stir and react. That's how you create sensual desire and ill will. And it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. Because when you react in this way, you are lost in thought. You become emotional. you cling on to that sense experience, and your emotion starts to stir your mind and make you reactive. That's the reason why you are no longer in the meditative state. You cannot be peaceful. Then when you lack the spiritual faculty of virya, you become sleepy. You don't see the importance of this teaching, this training, this meditation. So when you don't have the understanding and you don't see the importance, when you go to a meditation class, you will feel sleepy. Or a Dhamma class, you will feel sleepy. So sloth and torpor is a dull mind state, make you sleepy, lethargic, lazy. Then when you have problems without the spiritual faculty, without faith, without sattva, virya, sati, samadhi and panya, you will have problems, especially when you don't keep your precepts. You violate the moral rules, then you create a lot of what they call karmic repercussion or karmic negativity of mind state. Then you develop fear, worry, anxiety because you might have killed people or harmed people, cheat and deceive people, committed adultery, or you must have lied to people, did certain mischief. Then when you don't keep the fifth precept, you partake in toxicant drugs or something, it will cause your consciousness to fall. Then it will lead to downfall because when you don't keep the fifth precept, you will violate all the first four precepts. That's how you suffer, you become afflicted. So all this will make you restless. When you don't keep your precept, without sila, your mind will not develop samadhi. Your mind will not be quiet and peaceful because you tend to have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lament, and your mind becomes restless. That's why it's a mental hindrance. It will hinder you from entering the meditative state to meditate. That's why precept is very important. Sila is the base for developing samadhi. That's the reason why the Buddha teaches sila, samadhi, and panya. Without sila, the real samadhi cannot kick in. Without sila, you entangle yourself with a lot of problems. Then your mind will develop the mental hindrance. And the last one is doubt. When you are not sure of the teaching, when you don't have the faith, the confidence in the spiritual law that governs life and existence, it's like you don't understand life. Like a scientist without scientific understanding, they cannot apply the scientific understanding to live life, to develop whatever that is useful for them, for humanity, for the environment, for life. So all this need understanding. So when the mental hindrance are there, it means your spiritual faculty is not there. And because people don't understand this, they straight away want to go into meditation. Without the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance is there. So when you try to meditate, what happens? The mental hindrance come and disturb you, hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. So it's like create hindrance, stop you from becoming peaceful, away within. So that meditative state, you cannot develop it, then what must you do? A lot of people don't have this understanding. They are forced to go and do all the thought-based meditation. That's why they go after method and technique to fix the mind, to control the mind. So all this so-called method and technique and instruction to meditate is an object of meditation where you use it to anchor your mind, to make it quiet and peaceful. And the worst is they go and focus and concentrate and make it one-pointedness. or they develop absorption meditation leading to samatha experiences, concentration. And that samatha, one pointedness concentration, is not samadhi. That one is not a free mind, it's a conditioned state. So people don't have the understanding, so they thought that is meditation, but that is the easiest way to prevent the mind from moving. Focus. That's why the jhanic factors, the five jhanic factors to develop jhana, what are they? First one is apply thought. You apply your thought on the object of meditation. Then you sustain the thought there, the second jhanic factor. Yeah. Then when you apply your thought and sustain your thought until you don't have any thought coming in, your everything is skilled at the one-pointedness, then you will experience calmness, piti, leading to sukhang. Then after that, ekagata is one-pointedness. And then the energy develops. Then you go into the various jhanic state. That's how they develop jhana. And the Buddha initially followed the other teacher, also developed them, but he reached the highest, the first jhana until the eighth jhana, and he knew it's not what he was searching for. He was still not enlightened, despite achieving equal standard and understanding as what the two teachers who had taught him, Alara and Udaka. That's why he went his own way. When he invited him as equal to teach, he said, no, I will go on with my search. That's why finally, when he realized the enlightenment underneath the Bodhi tree, he realized all this meditation that he has developed earlier on was not the real one, the correct one, because it doesn't give rise to knowledge and wisdom, the inside knowledge and wisdom and understanding to liberate the mind, to realize the unconditioned. That's the reason why the Buddha came to realize later on, if it's not because of the existence of the unconditioned, escape from the conditioned world will be impossible. That's how all this thing comes about. Then when he realized that, he meditated differently. Then when he awakened, after he connected to his nature and inherited his past perfection and cultivation, he became the fully enlightened one, Sammasambuddha. Then when he became the fully enlightened one, he taught the teaching, the Dhamma, so beautifully, so clearly. And his Dhamma is so beautiful. That's why his emphasis is sati. The thing that separates his teaching from others' religion is sati, mindfulness or awareness. Other teaching don't have. Only recently, some later modern teaching, they try to use present moment awareness or awareness in place of the word sati. Yeah. But not everybody understand what awareness is or sati is. But that one is not a mind. That one is a nature within, the awareness nature. That nature is all the time, eternally with us. But we need a vehicle and a tool to access that nature. That's why we need a karmically conditioned form of mind, vehicle and tool to come. Then with that, we can access that nature, that gateway. Yeah. So all this understanding, it's not in other religion. That's why our Buddha Dhamma, the Buddhist teaching, is very unique, very simple, yet very profound and very penetrative. Okay, so after this explanation, I believe you all understand how to develop the meditation. Now we go on, I continue with the notes, then you will understand better. As meditation is a very general word, it is important to understand the meditation as taught by the Buddha. The real meditation as taught by the Buddha is to develop the wisdom via insight into the three universal characteristics of nature, means anicchang, dukkhang and anatta, so as to be at peace with all situations wherever you are. That is The third kind of samadhi, upadhi vivika. They call it the three types of peace. First one is kaya vivika. Means you seclude yourself, kaya, from everything. Means you go into the form seclusion. Means your form and mind go into a quiet place, a tranquil setting. You seclude yourself from the worldly activity, everything. That's why they go to the monastery. They go to the forest, the mountain. They stay with nature. They seclude themselves. That's why the monk, when they renounce, they shave everything, they renounce the world, and they seclude themselves, they meditate. They cultivate. So that one can bring about the first type of peace. The Buddha said, kaya vivika. Then the second type of peace is to seclude the mind. The Buddha called it citta vivika. To seclude the mind, a lot of people who do samatha can do it. One-pointedness and absorption meditation, they seclude the mind. Means the mind. The mind goes in, reside inside, seclude. Then you will experience the piti, the sukhang, the one-pointedness, the tranquility, the stillness, everything, together with the strong energy. They call it the thought energy, the energy field. So that is one way to be peaceful. And during that time, because the mental hindrances are all suppressed, it's like you are enlightened. But the second type of peace, you cannot live life. Here you have to seclude your mind all the time. Every time you got problem, you go to one corner to meditate, to seclude the mind, and become peaceful again. Whereas the one that the Buddha realized is the enlightenment. He called it the upadhi vivika, the third type of peace. The peace that comes with wisdom, understanding, awakening. So this one is the highest. That's the reason why the Buddhist meditation, the real meditation as taught by the Buddha, is to develop this wisdom. We are insight into the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, so that you can be at peace with all situations wherever you are. So this is the third type of peace, upadhi vivika. Then about the word meditation, I said it's a very general word, because meditation, actually you check the dictionary, is a very loose word. Whatever you train your mind to be is a form of meditation. Like you train your mind to have metta, then it's metta bhavana. Means bhavana is meditation, metta, meditation. So if you train your mind to be calm, peaceful, it becomes samatha, bhavana, meditation. Then you train your mind to develop other quality, like qigong, yoga, tai chi, or whatever. Then you call them by different name. So there are also certain type of mind training where they focus and concentrate, like the Hindu meditation, the 40 type of meditation object, to develop one-pointedness, concentration. Then they also have the kundalini and all this thing. So meditation is a very loose word. If you are not careful, you can be confused. But the Buddha's meditation is very specific. He said, to develop meditation, you need to be heedful. You have to start with heedfulness. Without heedfulness, you cannot be in the meditative state. So what is heedfulness? Heedfulness is the spiritual faculty of sati, awareness. You must be mindful first. then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Once you have that developed, means your mind is in a meditative state. When you are mindful and aware, you are without thought. And without thought, you are with your true one, true awareness. You are silent, peaceful, tranquil. And it's a free mind. It's not a conditioned mind. It's not in concentration. You don't need to have anything to hold it. It is just aware by its own understanding. That's the reason why when we develop this meditation, we will understand relaxation is very important. When we are fully relaxed and just aware, then the meditative mind will arise by itself. But to do that, you must have the spiritual faculty. So all of meditation start with the training of the mind to have the spiritual faculty to understand spiritual teaching. And when the spiritual faculty is developed, sati and samadhi will bring about heedfulness. That's how you can meditate. That the meditative state is the mind that can meditate, that can awaken, that can insight into phenomena. So everything boils down to the five spiritual faculty leading to the stability of sati. That's why I read on, you understand. Fully relax and be aware to develop the wisdom born of the direct seeing. When you are relaxed and aware, that silent mind can insight into into the phenomenal world, insight into the universal characteristics of nature, the three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. Anicchang is impermanent, dukkang is suffering state, and anatta is non-self or empty nature. So these three universal characteristics is very important. It is called a universal characteristic because these characteristics are inherent in all phenomena in our universe. May be physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, they exhibit this universal characteristic. Everything that arises within the conditioned world, they are dependent originating condition arising, not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why it is impermanent. It echoes and flows with condition. It is dependent originating, condition arising, paticca samuppada. Samuppada is cause of arising. Then dependent on that, paticca samuppada, dependent originating, dependent arising. So all this understanding is very important. Then when you can see an insight into phenomena, see things as they are, the direct seeing, you will awaken. You will become enlightened. Because this meditative mind, the silent mind, the true mind, is wisdom energy. Without thought, just aware. And the awareness nature is capable of observation without thought, without the interference of the brain, the views, opinion, and conditioning, your belief system, all they don't come in and mess up the investigation and the observation. You can see things as they are. Then you can observe clearly how living beings become what they are. Starting with yourself, self-knowledge, understanding how you become emotional, fearful, unhappy, miserable, excited, whatever my state. They all arise because of your views, your opinion, your conditioning. That's how you can get yourself entangled, afflicted, miserable. So without this observation, there is no self-knowledge. There is no understanding of who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being, and how you become entangled in life, and how you develop all the emotion, the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the sorrow, the lamentation. Of course, at times there are also joy, happiness, peacefulness, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind when you know how to develop the meditation. When you are heedful, as opposed to the heedless living or heedless state of mind. So all this, you will see them clearly in the meditation. And when you are able to see them, you develop understanding. Then the understanding will enable you to awaken, to liberate your mind. Then when you awaken, you straighten your view. You become different. You become a blessing to all. You understand life clearly. You can live life to the fullest. You can be a blessing to all. And this is the beauty of the Buddhist meditation. Okay? I will read on, then you understand. The mind that is liberated is so free. It understands that all of phenomena, whether physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, are all empty, and they are all conditioned arising causal phenomena following nature's law. This one is very important. This is deep, penetrative wisdom. Make a note of this and understand this, then you will awaken. Then your meditation and cultivation become very easy. When you have developed a contemplative wisdom and understanding, then when you silence your mind and meditate, it will trigger off the real penetrative awakening anytime, any place, any moment. So this understanding will help cultivator. In cultivation, we should thank those people who are not so friendly and constantly make things difficult for us, because they are the ones that can give us the condition to test our cultivation. Hence, we should perceive them with wholesomeness and wisdom. We are accepting them as they are, then expressing our gratitude towards them. Then great compassion will naturally arise in our mind. Do not perceive any situation with negativity, for the absence of negativity is good. So don't try to do good, because without wisdom, one can end up becoming just a good-hearted fool. You are good according to you. The unenlightened ones are so heedless, chasing and clinging after so many things in life. They still grieve and worry about life despite having so many things and possessions, or they lack contentment and wisdom to live the happy life, the noble life. The first noble truth of dukkha that expound so clearly the eight reality of life and existence need to be understood. The first turning leading to the second turning. Otherwise, they can really make human being miserable. Without understanding the true Dhamma as taught by the Buddha, suffering will be the final result. So do strive on with heedfulness and do not be heedless. Then please listen to the recorded tape for more detail. Then going back a bit, we will give an example of people who are not so friendly and constantly make things difficult for us. You should try to understand this part so that you will be able to cultivate differently. The Buddha actually also shared one story. As a bodhisattva in a distant past, he was actually tested by the king, the then king, who became finally Kondanya. You remember? He was perfecting his perfection of patience, Kanti Parami. Then somehow the bodhisattva to be at that time had an encounter with this king. Then the king heard from his officer that all the concubines that follow him, means the wife and all those mistress and all this, they were amazed and like happily listening to this ascetic, which was the Bodhisattva, sharing with us that he practiced patience. And you can do whatever to him, he will not react. And he is full of patience. And he's so sincere, they find him very cute. Although it is in a very like full of beard and other things, ascetic form. Then when the king heard about it, he was actually not happy. Because he wants to really teach this ascetic a lesson. So he tried to make life difficult for the Bodhisattva. He said, I don't know how he addressed the Bodhisattva. He said, I heard you are cultivating the perfection of patience and you can endure anything. The Bodhisattva replied, yes, O King. He said, I don't believe. I want to test you. He said, I'm going to cut your limbs, all four of them. See how you can still maintain your patience and don't get angry with me and all those things. The surprise answer that came from the Bodhisattva was, he said, O King, if that is what you want, let it be. Then the strange thing was, the king really did it. Then the Bodhisattva, because he has already completed his perfection, he made that aspiration. He said, by the power of his parami, his perfection, all of the cultivation that he has perfected on this parami of Kanti, he said, if at that moment when the king gave the instruction and tear away the four limbs, if there is a single thought of anger or aversion or dislike, let the limb not come back to me. And when they did it, because his mind was so pure, so perfect, and he was so beautiful, all the four limbs came back to him, and the king was shocked. That's why he straight away came down from his horse and paid his respect. And the Bodhisattva, being so understanding, thank the king, the future Kondanya. He said, don't worry, he said, because you have helped me to complete my perfection. And I make this aspiration for you. In future, when I arise as a Sammasambuddha, you will be the first living being that I will take across. That's how Kondanya become the first enlightened Sotapan. After the Buddha delivered the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, to the five ascetics. Before he finished that sermon, Kondanya became a Sotapan, enlightened. So this shows us clearly how a person who tried to make life difficult for you, they are your good knowing advisor that can actually give rise to condition for you to cultivate and perfect yourself. So do not get angry with them. Do not become like affected by what happened. Always perceive a situation with wholesomeness. It could be a blessing in disguise. Without this guy, I cannot be tested. I don't know how my cultivation is. Then there's another Dhamma friend I remember. She used to come and share with me. She's a very cute lady, very bubbly. He said, Reptile, I fully agree with you. And my most difficult tests are my two sons. Is it? She's a Cantonese. They are the only two that can make her angry and like woke up. Is it? The other people to her is no more an issue because her Dhamma understanding is quite good. So he said, what you say is very true. These are my greatest teachers. They really tested my emotion and patience and my attachment. So these are very good understanding. Then, of course, for others, I don't know whether it's appropriate for you to try or not. If you have the condition, maybe you should give it a try. And you have people whom you don't like around you, especially those who have very fierce mother-in-law and all those things. Hopefully you can perceive it with wholesomeness and do not arise the anger, the unhappiness. So thank them for giving you the condition to test yourself, to train your mind. Then there's also a story of this Socrates. Socrates, he got a wife that always nagged him and said, he is stupid and all things. He's a very wise guy. He's ahead of time. And if he had told the lie, he would have become very wealthy, greatly rewarded. But he chose to stick to on his understanding. They sent him to jail. Then the wife every time complained and scolded him and cursed him. So when people went and visit Socrates, they said, did your wife come? Did your wife did all those things to you? He said, don't worry. He said, my wife is helping me. They were very surprised. He said, my wife actually put me to test. I developed a lot of understanding and patience through understanding what goes on when he did all those things to me. So when you have the wisdom, the wise one, they will turn the situation around. It will become a blessing in disguise. So there are many things. Sometimes an enemy can also turn out to be your good knowing advisor who can test you, train you, and you can have the understanding and ability to turn things around. Means you have the Dhamma, you have the understanding. Do what you have to do. You have to ask for forgiveness. If you understand that all these are due to past karmic, then you do what you have to do. Ask for forgiveness, repentance, then vow not to repeat all this by following the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. So you start cultivating by keeping the precept to avoid all evil, training your mind to be ever mindful, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, to develop the right thought, right speech, right action, and all the wholesomeness, right living. That's how you change your life. That's how you transform yourself. When you cultivate following the Dhamma way, the advice of the Buddha, you will definitely have the good life, the beautiful life, because that is taking care of karma. When you avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind, and meditate, you develop wisdom, understanding. So all this a very good example that you can make use of. So cultivation is not about everything go your way, then only you can cultivate. No. Cultivation is developing wisdom to accord and flow, to be at peace with all people, all situation, all condition. Upadhi Viveka, the third type of peace. So that is the ultimate aim of all Buddhist meditation. Okay, then we move on. With that understanding and foundation, we can move on to part 3. Part 3 is on meditation. Now this question is also very good. The question is, while cultivating mindfulness in daily life, I was able to be mindful most of the time when I'm going about living the normal life. Most people, if they are diligent, they really do it. They can. This part is not difficult, quite easy. But what follow is very interesting. And most people fail unless they have developed the right cultivation. So According to this question, he said, but when confronting with work-related and personal problems or issues, I find it very difficult to maintain the heedfulness. And I realize that the same worry and fearful thought keep coming back to haunt me. You know why the worry and the fearful? Because when you are in your working life, career environment, you are under tremendous pressure and stress. So that fear, worry, anxiety, and the fearful thought keep on coming out, and they will like haunt you. So the question is, how can I overcome this? So you all should reflect on this, because this is a reality. Many cultivators cannot pass this test. So, and the way I answer him is very simple and very interesting and very useful. You should reflect on it and make use of it to cultivate. I answered him, I said, this is a very good question. Yes, when there is no first noble truth reality to disturb you, cultivating heedfulness or mindfulness in daily life is fairly easy. The challenge is when? The challenge is when one is confronted with the first noble truth reality of birth, old age, sickness and death, threatening separation from loved one and one's prized possession, etc. Like work-related and personal health, career, relationship and financial problem, etc. Can your mind still be at peace and calm? That is the question. To cultivate the requisite heedfulness. Those who have gone through life, they will know without the Dhamma, the wisdom and the understanding, that fearful thought, that worry, the anxiety, they keep on coming back and haunt you. It like intrude into your brain. That's how people become mentally afflicted. Then they develop depression, mental problem. So all these are very common. That's why the cultivation is very different, the real cultivation. The wisdom that you need to develop must be penetrative enough for you to understand all this and overcome all this and root out all this. So this is most important, and this is also the most difficult. But it can still be done if one has developed the appropriate wisdom to confront them with the right understanding. That's why my nature knows. I went through life, I understand, I got no problem. I can confront them all. And I did very well. I become like very clear in what I do. I become very efficient. Then I resolve things so beautifully, amicably, until everywhere I go, people like me. And every company that employ me really benefit a lot. It's like I help them to solve many things, transform many things, and bring about many changes for the better. And company that do business, they also get rewarded because I help them to make a lot of money, all legally, not illegal. they are all very beautiful because of Dhamma. So when you have the Dhamma, you can do it. Then now I will move on to how it can be done. So starting with the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha said, this is the reason why the Buddha constantly advised the bhikkhu to reflect on the five daily contemplation and to strive on with heedfulness to arise the much needed initial wisdom to overcome all this first noble truth reality. So if you look at the five daily contemplation, you will understand they counter the first noble truth reality. So we go through one by one. The first one, this body of ours is of the nature to decay, grow old, for it has not gone beyond old age and decay. So this one is to help us overcome which reality? Old age, right? Huh? Old age. Then the second one, our body is of the nature to be diseased or sick because it has not gone beyond disease and sickness. So our body is of the nature to grow old, get sick. And finally, the third one is die. Our body is of the nature to die, for it has not gone beyond death. So these first three is to counter the first four reality of the first noble truth. Birth, leading to old age, sickness, and death. Wherever there is birth, there is old age, sickness, and death. And old age, sickness, and death, you must always remember. The body is not you. The five aggregate of form and mind is not you. The body is made of four elements. They go the way of nature. That's why the Buddha asks you to reflect and contemplate and see clearly every day that your body is of the nature to grow old, get sick, and die, because it goes the way of nature and it's impermanent. It leads to suffering when you attach and cling, when you deliberately believe that this is you, this is me. If you think you exist, you will worry about this physical body getting old, getting sick, and die. That's the reason why the Buddha saw the four signs and left the palace to seclude himself and to cultivate and to develop the enlightenment, because he realized he has a problem. When he realized that this is a common universal problem of all living beings, humanity, that each and every one of us, if we live long enough, we will grow old, become very haggard. Then our senses will fail us. Then we can become very sick, full of disease, full of sickness. Some can be very traumatic, like what we have gone through. Then finally, it will die. So when he was confronted with this reality, he asked himself, what is he doing all this while in the palace? All of the temporary joy and happiness that he had, that the father has created for him, has no more meaning, because he reflected, finally one day, I will still get old, become very haggard, my senses will fail me, I will become very sick, diseased, very frail, very fragile, and finally I have to die. So I have this problem which I cannot overcome. How can I overcome old age, sickness, and death that comes with birth? So this first four reality, he was seeking the answer. Then underneath the Bodhi tree, when he meditated and awakened, then when he realized the universal characteristic, then only he realized this physical body of his is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, karmically conditioned out for him to come to this universe. And this one is not him, but it's a vehicle for him to come, the segmented life that he called himself the Buddha, Sakyamuni. Then his problem gone. We are always sickness and death and birth pertain to the physical body, which is not him. He has a nature which is eternal, beyond, unborn, never die, the unconditioned. That's the reason why when he realized that he awakened, there was so much joy. Then the fourth contemplation covers the next three reality. In fact, the next four reality. He said, all of our loved ones, our wealth, our property, and our other prized possession, etc., which we hold on to so dearly, they will all one day separate from us, or we will separate from them when our breath stops. Means, do not attach to things, do not cling, do not crave, do not be deluded by all this, because you yourself, the form and mind, is dependent, originating, impermanent, not a permanent, unchanging entity. He know you, he know me. So how can you own anything? You can't even own your physical body. Well, it goes the way of nature. Then how can this entity own anything? Well, this entity goes the way of nature. It come and it go. So see this clearly. So understand that the fourth daily contemplation is for you to understand when there is condition for this to arise. Make use of it for the good of yourself, your loved one, and the many. Develop the three types of happiness that you can have as a lay person, as an individual. But do not deludedly grasp, cling, and hold on to it, wanting to own it, possess it. Then you will suffer. You will become afflicted, miserable, when you cannot get what you want, when separation occurs. See clearly the universal characteristic. He know you, he know me. But there is such thing as life. There is such thing as existence. There is such thing as loved one, wealth, property, possession, whatever. When there is condition for them to arise, you can have them, you can own them. You can make use of them for the good of the many, including yourself and your loved one. That should be the understanding. But not to cling onto them, not to grasp onto them, not to hold onto them, not to go and deludedly have the wrong view, sakkayadity, self-delusion, to believe that you exist and you can own them, and all this can be mine. Then the evil root will arise and you will be afflicted. Karmically, the evil root will make you evil. Understand that the form and mind is subject to karma. That is the most penetrating wisdom within the conditioned world. So you cannot simply do things. When you understand that, you must take care of karma. That's the understanding. That's the Dhamma that you must have. Otherwise, your life will be afflicted. You will become upside down. So this fourth contemplation is very deep, very penetrating. You can go into this deep and understand that all these are dependent originating condition arising. When you have worked towards it, when you have the appropriate understanding and plan the causes and condition for it to arise, it will arise. Like your parami, your virtue, when you follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid evil, keep the precept, cultivate noble values, noble eightfold path, then develop wisdom to be a blessing to all, have wholesomeness as goodness. All this will come back to you through karmic friction. That is your inheritance, your family. That's why life after life, when you come, even as a bodhisattva, life becomes beautiful, wonderful, perfect. And that is what life is all about. That's why my form and mind is a good living reality. The last 60 over years has been so beautiful, especially since the year 1989. The last 30 to 31 years, 31 years, has been the most beautiful part of this segmented life, for my mind's life. And it's really, really beautiful, wonderful, perfect. Everything is just so beautiful. I don't know how to express it beyond that for you. Hopefully all this can give you the faith and the understanding. Then the last contemplation is to understand the law of karma. Just now I explained to you. This one will give you great wisdom. Because the form and mind is subject to karma. That's why the Buddha said, this is the great law of karma. And it's also the first right view that we must develop in our cultivation or have to begin our cultivation. The Buddha said, each and every one of us, including all living beings, not only human beings, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. This is the great law of karma. Since karma is so important, we must all take care of karma. We are avoiding all evil. Do good and purify our mind, which is the advice of all Buddhas. To develop the strong karmic nature to bring about the good life every time we come or we choose to come. So to avoid all evil, the Buddha prescribed the keeping of the precept. If you don't keep your precept, you break your precept, it constitutes major evil. Which means you kill, you harm, you misappropriate, steal, lie, deceive, commit sexual misconduct, partake in intoxicants and drugs that can make you heedless, then it may condition you to violate all the four precepts, first to four. Then you get yourself in deep trouble and deep shit. So this is the part where you need to really develop the understanding, the law of karma. So here the Buddha say, we are all born of our karma, is referring to our form and mind. There is no contradiction. A lot of people cannot understand when questioned, they don't know how to answer. You say the Buddha teach anicchang, dukkang, anatta, non-self. Then now, you say we are all born of karma, heir to our karma condition, supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of. So, what are you trying to tell me? You are contradicting yourself. No, the Buddha never contradicts. Because that form and mind is impermanent, not a permanent and genuine entity. It is not me. So when it comes to the form and mind, that one is subject to karma. Understand that deeply. There is no contradiction. And that form and mind is non-self, empty. Not no self, not self. But in between, non-self. There is something, but it's not a permanent and changing entity. That's why you can live life. You can live the beautiful third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda, the life of enlightened being. The first phase of Dhamma is to learn the teaching. Then second phase of Dhamma is to put it into practice or cultivation. So first phase is called Pariyatti, the learning of the teaching. Then second phase of Dhamma is Patipatti, cultivation. Then third phase, Pativeda, you get to reap your good karma, your good fruition of your hard work. Means the third phase of Dhamma is to live the life of enlightenment. After you have cultivated and awakened, then you get to reap the fruit of your hard work. And that is the third phase of Dhamma. You live the life of an enlightenment with that full understanding, liberated mind, the heedful living. And life can be so beautiful, so meaningful, and so wonderful. And our mind state is always tranquil, peaceful, aware, with a lot of joy, understanding. And it can just accord and flow. And life becomes very beautiful. And everything can be understood. There is contentment, there is joy, there is virtue, there is wisdom and understanding. And you hold the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path Factor. And this is also beautiful. And I now will read on the next paragraph, page 178, last paragraph. This one, once I read, you will understand. Once the wisdom born of one's cultivation and above constant reflection and contemplation has stabilized, then this projection of wrong thoughts to haunt you will not have power over you. That's how you overcome it. Now you understand? The five daily contemplation together with the cultivation on heedfulness, you will be able to develop the wisdom needed for you to overcome all these wrong thoughts that haunt you. Then they will lose their power over you. Wrong thoughts are deluded thoughts that condition one's fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation and suffering, via one's self-delusion or sacrality that condition one to cling on to the five aggregates of form and mind as the I and the me, hence the heedlessness. So ultimately, it is wisdom that really free and liberate one's mind. Job pressure, deadlines and targets can be very stressful. Those who are in the career environment will know. Job pressure, stress deadline, and they give you a target. And every time you achieve, they give you a higher target. Can be very stressful within the job and career environment. And if one has not developed the wisdom to confront them with understanding, it is not easy to cope. The same goes for personal problems. So the Dhamma understanding to confront all the First Noble Truth reality is very important. And this is the reason why the Buddha's final advice before his parinibbana or passing away is to strive on with heedfulness to develop the requisite wisdom to liberate one's mind. Understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha 3.3. Dhammapada verse 21, 22, and 23 confirm the importance of heedfulness in order to become enlightened. Heedfulness equals apamana in Pali. And like I say, it has two parts. First part is ever mindful. Then constantly meditative, to constantly cultivate the Dhamma and the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. So the first thing we must do in cultivation is when we start our meditation, So the first thing we must do when we start our meditation is to train our mind to be aware or mindful. Mindful means with the silent inner awareness, to be ever mindful without thought most of the time first. Then only use this trained mind in sati to meditate, to cultivate the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha, which is cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. How do we train this mind to be mindful and aware most of the time? First, we must understand why are we most of the time heedless and not mindful or aware and peaceful. According to the Buddha, it's because of the five mental hindrances that condition our heedless thinking, thereby stirring our mind and hindering our mind from returning to its natural meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness before the stirring. So this one I have explained before, because you lack five spiritual faculties, the opposite five. So this one, once you understand, it becomes very easy. So here I list down the five mental hindrances, pancha nivananas. First, sensual desire and ill will, they are a pair related to greed and aversion or hatred. Third is sloth and torpor, lethargic mind or sleepy mind, means you are not alert, you don't have the spiritual zeal or energy. Fourth is restlessness or agitated mind due to your fear, worry, and anxiety. The last one is doubt, when you don't understand the Dhamma, the truth, the nature's law that governs life and existence. You don't know why things are like that. That's why you have a lot of doubt. When you are in doubt, you lack confidence, you lack faith, you lack sadha. Then your mind breaks down. When there is doubt, there is uncertainty, fear, worry, anxiety. Then you cannot make good decision. you will be like conditioned into depression, negativity of mind state. That's how people get themselves entangled and become depressed. They suffer mental suffering leading to mental problem. That's why they need to see psychiatrists, psychologists. then they sometimes need to consult. Nowadays they call this one. there are people where you can go for consultation to help you overcome your phobia, your fear, and all those things. I don't know you call them what. Psychiatry also do this, but there's another group. Well, recently I saw this interview. I think it's the American program, the CNN or what. They got this head of that I don't know what you call that, is the association or don't know whether it's a medical association or group. It's like they are the president of the association. Then they interview him. that he really share his point of view. He said they cannot cope, no. Their professional people are not enough because of the MCO. He said the surge in demand for their service, not fivefold, tenfold, or hundredfold. They cannot cope. There's so many people who cannot face the lockdown. They become cuckoo. They develop a lot of funny character and problem, and they need to consult. I think the problem with America is they have health insurance. That's why all this good money. Good money. So, no wonder nowadays I saw a lot of new kids. They like to study psychology, psychiatry, become psychiatrists and all those things. Then they like help people cope with all this type of mental problem. But the Dhamma way is the best, free, cheapest, but not easy to develop. That's why you still need to pay them, because they are trained, they are qualified. But most of the time, they may give you some relatively good advice, but I realize it's not a permanent fix. Most of them are temporary fix. To really permanently root it out and fix, the Dhamma way is the best. Really root out. I have helped many, many. Because it involves spiritual things, not only what you see physically. It involves past karma, everything. So it's not easy. Then every civilization is different. Every like evolution of consciousness is different. Like our era is so different. The time of our father, forefather, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, they are so different. We are still so behind, underdeveloped. And that is only about 50, 60 years ago. Even during the early 60s, I remember, we are still very relatively underdeveloped compared to the last 30, 40 years. We can term ourselves as still very primitive at that time. But the last 30 years, really fantastic changes, transformation, evolution. That's why understanding also evolved. And our generation is the golden age, lucky one. We managed to witness the old and the new. We are within the transition period. And we are born after World War II. That's why I say most of us are lucky. But you may avoid World War II. Some of them may not be lucky, but there are still other type of war which may not be World War. Like for no reason recently, Lebanon, the capital, Beirut. The explosion, I don't know what happened. Then they, according to a news report, they stored 2,700 tons of ammonium nitrate, which is the chemical that can explode. So I don't know what happened. Then there's another version say it's done by something moving very fast. So our world is full of all these things. For you to understand, you must have that Dhamma. Not easy. You must have a scientific mind too. Okay, then we move on. The five mental hindrances condition our healer's thinking, lack of peace and awareness. So we must reverse all this. We are cultivating the opposite five, which are the spiritual faculties. So don't go and fight, control or suppress the hindrance. Just cultivate the opposite five. When the spiritual faculties are there, the mental hindrances, where they counter them. So you must cultivate sadda or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. And second spiritual faculty is virya or spiritual zeal or tenacity to cultivate heedfulness. Then sati or mindfulness or awareness. Then develop samadhi, the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind. And finally, wisdom, panya. With sati and samadhi, you can see things as they are and awaken. then you will understand. That's how Panya, wisdom, come to be. So these five spiritual faculties I have control, I have also explained. They are most important. Cultivate them, then you can straight away be in the meditative state. Then you just relax, silent, and when you are in the meditative state, where your spiritual faculty will guarantee you to be in the meditative state. When you have sadha, your mind is very calm and very composed. When you have virya, you won't be sleepy. True or not? Then sati is natural, where it's a spiritual faculty. So when you are in sati, you have no thought. You are in a meditative state straight away. Then when you stabilize it, it becomes samadhi. It can see things as they are. It can observe, silent mind. It can understand. It can awaken. It can insight into the normal. That's how wisdom come to be. The five spiritual faculty is the meditative mind. So to cultivate these five spiritual faculty, the Buddha recommend the pre and post puja and devotional practice of paying respect or homage to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, and taking refuge in them, followed by the renewal of the five precepts, chanting of the various salutations to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. Then the paying of respect and the taking of refuge, followed by the chanting of the various salutations, is to develop the faith, the sadha, the virya, and the spiritual faculty, and to develop the understanding of the triple gem. Then the paying of respect or mindfulness, reverential salutation, is to develop the composed mind, to have the faith, to be mindful while paying respect to the Buddha. So do not underestimate the importance of devotional practice or puja in the cultivation process. When sati is developed, samadhi will come to be. And with sati and samadhi, one will be able to have the clarity of mind to see things as they are, without interference of the thought. We are the sati in direct seeing, hence awakening to the truth, leading to the wisdom. Okay. How much more? Wow, so much more. Okay, we keep it for next week. Never mind, we keep it for next week. We are still a bit long. Maybe I will read the last paragraph. Huh? This one is useful. Then to decondition the heedless thinking, we can use the mind serving method as a skillful means to train the mind to just feel and relax, no more thinking. As we sweep the mind through our body, this will allow our mind to naturally relax and calm down on its own. We can also combine with metta, radiating loving kindness or metta, to develop the inner well-being and wholesome state of mind to enhance our meditation. After the mind sweep method and metta training, our mind should be more relaxed, calm and peaceful. Then we can use it to develop sati, the silent mind with inner awareness. We are the anapana sati, or mindfulness of the in and out breath, training as taught by the Buddha in his kaya nupassana practices. After that, when sati is already quite stable, we should move on to the mindfulness of the four postures, followed by sati sampajana, or the daily mindfulness with clear comprehension, training as described in the kaya nupassana's six category of practices. Once sati is established, use it to cultivate the three turning of the four noble truth and the four foundation of mindfulness to complete the training. The real meditation as taught by the Buddha is the cultivation of the noble eightfold path, leading to the cessation of all suffering and enlightenment in the here and the now. Okay, then 3.4 summary, you go and read. And we will continue next week, eh? Because this chart down there is very important. This chart, we will spend a lot of time on this. You have to go through that chart. That chart is very complete. I develop it, because to understand what is meditation as taught by the Buddha, this chart actually brings out the understanding very clearly. So okay, with this. We can stop. Okay. The other thing is the benefits of meditation. Straight away, the obvious benefit is you will develop inner peace, inner calmness, and inner well-being. So inner peace and inner calmness and inner well-being, they are byproduct of that training, the meditation. So inner peace leading to inner well-being is very important. Then there is clarity of mind. Then you can develop wisdom, understanding. Then you will be able to recuperate, to actually recharge yourself after a tired day. That's why meditation has a lot of benefits. And the most obvious one is inner peace leading to inner well-being. Then you can at the same time have clarity of mind to make better decisions, to actually make you more efficient in the way you do your work, in the way you study. It helps you in your study, it helps you in your career, it helps you to understand life, to live life. When you are in a meditative state, you don't panic, you don't have fear, worry, anxiety. All this negativity of mind state cannot come to you when you have the wisdom and the understanding. So the beauty of meditation is really very beautiful, and it's a lot. The benefits of meditation is a lot. You can really become very beautiful. So hope by now you can understand why you must meditate, why you must cultivate, why you must develop the understanding to awaken. It is for you, your life. Your future depends on this teaching and this understanding. So do strive on with faithfulness, okay? Then we will end. Okay, so we will open up for second session, meditation, reporting, and also asking of questions with regards to meditation and the teaching.
Hello, very beautiful coaching. Amitabha.
Amitabha.
Amitabha to all Kayanitas.
Director,
you were saying that you got any comment on the Hasutta that you shared today?
Yeah.
What really come across to me today is that question number one that says if your life is very smooth, you can be mindful most of the time.
But actually,
I thought the reverse is also very true, you know. Confront with many obstacles, you're like so alert, you know,
correct,
so mindful,
correct.
You know. You know what I mean?
Yes, so, for your case, it's different because there are people who need to go through all the tough encounter, then they only become very serious, very determined.
So for me, it's the opposite case that I become very alert and very mindful.
Yeah, because your condition is different.
Pocheng,
very good, Sadhu. This is very good sharing. There are some like you, but very few, very few. Because you become dead serious when you are faced with all those things. Then you know this is important. That's why you move.
So I can apply all the Dharma that I learn, huh?
Yeah, no problem. And you will learn them very fast. You will learn them
So in this scenario, it's not true that only when your life... I thought when your life is so smooth, you don't want to learn anything.
Correct. But most of them, when they go into meditation, when they started, they realize initially during certain period when they don't have any problem, they can spend time on meditation. Then their daily mindfulness develop. But the problem is when they encounter health problem, financial problem, children's problem, relationship problem, career-related problem. Then they realize that thought keep on haunting them and make them unable to be mindful, to be aware, because that fear, worry, anxiety, that negative wrong thought keep on coming in and haunt them, and they don't know what to do. Well, they have not developed the wisdom. They may be mindful. They experience the peace, the calmness, the tranquility, the heedful state of mind, but not the stable one. If it's the stable one, the Dhamma will come in. Then they become different. But most of this is just initially. So initially, they realize it is easy. But to stabilize it is not easy. And that is the part a lot of people doesn't realize. That's why I say don't be complacent. When the thing come, continue to do. Work on it. Like what Pucheng did with urgency. Because when you are confronted with all the whatever First Noble Truth reality, and when you see the urgency, then you will go all out. Huh? That type of mind is different. Eh? That type of mind will never be complacent. That's why she really make the resolve and did everything that I advised her. Then she become different. So this is how things can also happen. Eh? So thank you, Pucheng, for that good sharing. Eh? So
as sadhu.
There's another perspective for cultivator to understand. Yeah, that one was based on a common, a normal question which that Kayamita at that time, because he attended the Heart Sutta class, she was working very hard. Then she realized she can do it for a certain period until the career, the office has problem, until she encountered a lot of fearful and worrying thing, means personal problem, especially related to First Noble Truth realities. Yeah. Anything else, Pucheng?
Okay. I just want to mention a little bit about my how you call that experience.
Okay. You should share. Very good.
Yes. Usually I do not have dreams, you know.
Yes, yeah, that is what will happen. You hardly dream after that.
Yes, but it came to me the recent week, not once but twice, you know. But these dreams are like, I have not idea what are those dreams, but I know what it is, but I have no idea what it is.
Later on you will understand. They are not normal dreams. They come because of certain reason.
Yeah, very strange kind of thing, you know. So
it is for you to understand.
But I just feel that this one is like something bad, you know.
Don't worry. Sometimes that dream, inside that dream, like you are not in your heedful state like that. But don't worry, because these are your subconscious and your unconscious release. But they have to come out. But these are the things that you have been holding on to deep inside that hasn't come out. So when you are releasing it, you don't have the understanding of now, because that subconscious and unconscious release is the past trapped inside there. So at that time, you don't have the understanding. So that one will surface. But for a while only. Then after that, the moment you come back to your understanding, you will know what that thing is. Then you will just allow it to be that thing.
I was like something not nice, but I have no fear of it because I have the Dhamma understanding. I know what I can do now, you know. Whatever in the past is a past, you know, so I can't do
anything. Yeah, you can reflect that way, but you must be careful. Don't fall into the same trap as Song. Use the thought to reason, understand or not? To analyze. Why I still have this mind state? Forget about it. Because that is the reality. Because whatever that come out is the reality. So the reality is, don't doubt. Investigate to understand. Finish. No more why still like that. Why still have all this? No more. That one is the mundane mind, the thought. They always come through the back door and create all this analysis or reason. So don't analyze, don't reason. Whatever happened is the reality. And like I always say, remember this, treat everything as part of the cultivation, part of the way. They will manifest. You will understand. That's how my nature went through it. It's not easy. You think very easy. A lot of people are trapped in thought. They go and analyze and reason and use the mundane mind again. You have to act with wisdom, understanding. No more going back to the mundane mind, the thinking part. Okay? That part is important for you.
Yes. Thank you, Vaitya. Yes. Yeah. I didn't really analyze it, but I just had this reflection that it's the past, let it go, you know.
Yeah, because the way you answer it is actually you have doubt. So you want to develop the justification because it's already past, let it go. So this is the thought justifying. At least this one is not trapped by it. It justifies, then you can live with it, understand or not? But the question is, whatever that come out is the reality. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. So you have to find out and investigate the condition. Then you will come to the understanding that I have given you, the hint. Thing is just the way it is. Then you will come to know that these are the trap, deep, conscious, the subconscious and the unconscious. But now the conscious level one, they got no power over you already. You, well, in the midst of life, they have no power over you. So now you have to go into the subconscious and the unconscious. And that part is not easy. That one you need to have mindfulness and awareness and wisdom and understanding to go in deeper. But based on what I have given you, the advice, that one is like a shortcut so that you understand straight away. But it's better for you to reflect and contemplate and develop the understanding. But always remember, the advice is whatever that arise, that is the reality. Like the Buddha said, condition like that, things will be like that. Don't go and question anymore. Then find out why like that. Finish. Because these are trapped emotion or what they call phobia or whatever of the past before you have this understanding. So when it release out, it come out as a dream. That's why that dream sometimes you may think, ayo, how come I still have this type of dream? That one is the thought trying to mislead you. And all this, the unconscious and the deep one, they take a while to release. Sometimes over 10, 20 years, slowly come out. As you penetrate your nature deeper and deeper and deeper, then more and more of this very fine one, they will start to release out. But really, you hardly dream anymore. There is no more dream. All those dreams that come, which is very little, is always for you to learn the subconscious release. And you no longer, like last time, had that gross mundane mind that dream a lot. Then that's why people cannot have good sleep, because a lot of this subconscious and the surface floating type of sankhara that create this type of dream state. Then when they wake up, they become groggy. There is no clarity. But yours one, there is clarity. When you wake up, you don't feel groggy. A lot of people sleep until they become very groggy. Our type of sleep is rest. Then we become fresh. We become alert, aware. Then the nature move inside there. Very different. Okay? That part you will go through.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Dio. I was reflecting that it was maybe my past, I call it past karma, you know.
Yeah, you can reflect on it and develop your own understanding. But finally, you will come to the real understanding. So initially, what you've gone through is not so bad. You at least know how to use the Dhamma way to reflect. So not so bad. But if it's the wrong thought one, it make you like lack confidence.
I never think of the wrong thought. Just like I say, this is probably my past karma that.
That's why I say you reflect the Dhamma way. It doesn't create that thing. Then it like satisfy you and resolve. Understand?
Yes, correct, correct. So it never really surface again after
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So the other thing about my meditation is that I want to share. Regarding the meditation, right, is these days like just aware and then at the heart area, very still and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
Huh? And the thing is when, for example, when there is a thunder, right, very loud thunder.
Yeah, it will not affect you.
Yes, it doesn't affect me. So it's very different from
last time there is fear. That's not the fear go there.
Yes.
Now awareness just pick it up.
Yes. It's like absorb it, you know. That's
yeah,
it, you know?
Yeah. It becomes so different, so beautiful.
Yeah. So different.
You have to stabilize your that awareness nature more and more. Until it's very stable, then your daily mindfulness also will become very different. Then you will start to see more and more the what they call the more fine type of defilement, very subtle defilement, which last time you may not be aware or pay attention. Then you start to learn many things that you never learned before. That's why I used to say technically, after you have connected, you don't need a teacher. Is the meaning is that where you will find out on your own and finally understand. But what I share with you is to allow you to move faster, so that you can progress. You can progress faster. You don't have to get yourself stagnate at certain level or certain places for a while. Even for those who stagnate, it's not really something very negative. It's just they take longer time to move. That's it. But it's still a good state to be in.
Thank you, Brother Tio.
Sadhu. Thank you for your good sharing also. Sadhu.
Thank you.